What does it even mean to live a legacy? Often we think of legacy in terms of what people might think of us when we're dead, but then we're dead. We're going to instead explore a living legacy. This is your host, Danielle Strickland. This is the Right Side Up podcast. And this is a partnership venture with World Vision, Strong Women, Strong World. This is going to be challenging and inspiring as we interview people from all over the world in all kinds of different sectors, living a life now that will matter later. A living legacy. Buckle up. This is sure to be challenging and inspiring. And I'm glad you're here. Hey guys, welcome to the Right Side Up. This guest that I'm going to interview for this episode, which is, living a legacy, is someone who's done just that. I'm not even sure how to explain the force that is Catherine Compton, but she is the Chief Development Officer for Strong Women, Strong World, who are our partners in this season. She's living an incredibly meaningful life. Her impact is literally stunning. Her deep commitment to love the poor and marginalized people of the world is evident in everything she does and touches everyone she meets in a profound way. From raising millions and millions of dollars to mobilizing, educating, informing individuals, corporations, foundations, community leaders, guys, and the media, this woman. She's also one of the most delightful, honest, intelligent, kind people I've ever met. She's an empowering leader who's hopeful in the midst of difficult times, and she has a lot of wisdom and experience she's sharing in this episode, and I know you're going to learn from her and be equally challenged and inspired like I was. So with not much further ado, please welcome to the podcast, Catherine Compton. Well, Catherine, welcome to the Right Side Up podcast, and I'm excited to have you here.
Well, thank you, Danielle, and I'm excited to be here with you. I'm a great respecter of all the work that you do and how you bring to light the issues that women face everywhere, here and there. And so, it's an honor and a privilege to be with you today.
Thanks, and I feel like I've already I've introduced you, but also like I've already really just introduced the world to the force as much as I can of your life and your legacy that you're living right now. And I'm fascinated, you're the driving force behind the Strong Women, Strong World initiative throughout World Vision. Tell me a little bit about kind of how that happened. How did you spend your life doing this beautiful work?
Well, thank you for that. And I'm hopeful that I'm a force for good, and really making a change in the lives of women and girls. But I'll give you a little bit of a background of where this all started. And I'd say it started as a young child. I grew up in a Mexican family of nine children, seven boys and two girls. And my mother changed the whole trajectory in our home by having a very serious conversation with my grandfather and my father and really expressing the need for her sons to be fully liberated and not dependent on a woman for anything, that they needed to learn how to cook, how to sew, how to clean, how to iron their shirts, and which changed the machismo dynamics in our home. And her approach of really being what I call reconciliatory really set a path of bringing the differences and the divides between men and women and access to opportunity into a more positive light instead of into a militant perspective. Sometimes we have to be a little forceful and draw on our militant side, but my preference is to really get to that place of what I call gender reconciliation as how God intended us to be in rightful relationships. So laying that as a foundation, when I came to World Vision, anywhere you go in the work that World Vision is doing, women are the women and girls are those that are most marginalized. They're the ones that are lacking access to education and to healthcare and to economics. And, there's all of the stats out there that validate this and verify this. And so how do we really change that dynamic? And if there was any good news about HIV and AIDS, the good news is that it forced us to look at the injustices and the inequities for women in a very public way, on how women needed to have access to healthcare, how so that they could be tested, how women needed to have economic opportunities and land rights, et cetera, et cetera. So that was the there. And then the here is that when we were trying to engage the church and others in responding to this crisis, there was a lot of stigma attached to it and a lot of hesitancy. Mm-hmm. But if you invited women to hear about it and to see why there were orphans and why there were widows, they were very quick to respond. There wasn't a stigma attached. They just cared that there were widows and that there were orphans. And thus was born Strong Women, Strong World at World Vision, is how do we do an intentional outreach to women by raising awareness, by using their influence within their sphere and their relationships, and that lead to resources. Mm. And so that really was the impetus for getting started on this. So
that's a cool,
that's a long answer for a short question, right?
No, I feel like that's like a long story with a short answer. I mean, you went from like your childhood upbringing and sort of some of the values that your mother instilled, which I think is a kind of fascinating, you know, discovery of equity from the sort of upside down world of like empowering boys. Like, I think that's not usually how that story goes. Yeah. So I think that's fascinating. You and I are both the mother of three boys, so it's impossible to escape, I feel like, that desire to see men fully empowered, which this is an invitation for that, you know, that to be truly empowered in the world means all of us have to be empowered.
Absolutely.
So I think that's such a cool way to discover that. I mean, that's fascinating. Yeah.
Well, she changed the dynamics in a very large family. And so, and it instilled in me a different approach, right? And so she used the old adage that you catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. And so really that was very, very helpful. I have not perfected it as she did. I'm still working on that, on the gentleness of spirit to do that. But it's really been helpful to keep that in mind and to not create another inequity, right? If we're so focused on empowering women at the diminishing of men and boys, then we're going to have another problem. So we need to bring everybody up together, you know? So,
yeah, it's always a tricky thing because I think sometimes there's a like inherent bias when anybody hears that the empowerment of girls or women are a strategy, then they feel instantly like, oh, well then what about boys or what about men? And they don't realize that actually it's a strategic decision that mm-hmm. actually lifts communities together.
Absolutely.
Right. And so it's kind of this weird, so you're, I would imagine you're always having to like overemphasize, hey guys, we like men. We're yeah. for men. Like, this is not an anti-men, which is weird that you would, that we would even have a society that thinks being pro-women is being anti-men. That's a bizarre construct.
Yeah. And we have to use, and how intentional we have to be in the language that we use, right? Mm-hmm. And so that when we talk about women's empowerment, you know, and, you know, and that's why I prefer the verbiage of gender reconciliation. Mm-hmm. And it's very biblically based. Mm-hmm. You go to the book of Genesis and God created us in his image. Mm-hmm. And then we are able to transfer that. And when I'm speaking about Strong Women, Strong World through World Vision's work, I'm able to say we work with the most marginalized mm-hmm. and the most vulnerable in the most difficult circumstances. And so therefore, those are usually mm-hmm. women and girls.
Yeah.
And so we're able to do that, but not to exclude the men and have them be part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other upside down, and this is kind of neat. I feel like you are a leader that kind of, I call it right side up, but other people might look at it as upside down. But just this idea that where you flip sort of some of the values of the world or the way that things have normally been done, and you sort of flip it to like a kingdom view, a God-centered view. So your upbringing's one of those things where like, whoa, hey, this is a different way to live, and different men, which lead to different relationships, would lead to common flourishing, you know. Mm-hmm. But then you shared about this, like really the HIV/AIDS crisis being this like window, this opportunity that, you know, and then also like the greatest challenge maybe that the world had ever faced at that point, where we're just like, again, going like, this is global, this is terrible, this is wrecking things. And then there's all these stigmas. And then you discovered that in that spot, there's this like, oh, wait a minute, there's this force for good that are, that is also female led and is also about the empowerment of women kind of on this side of the world, that is directly related to the empowerment of women on that side of the world. And then something had like a light went on, like something, it took off. Like, tell me more about that season. Like you said, like, I saw that women didn't hold that stigma. Like they didn't have those sort of reservations of getting involved. They just were like, okay, let's help. Tell me more about that.
You know, well, and the truth of the matter is that when you were looking at the issue of HIV and AIDS in the developing world, you had to look at the impact on women, because we called them the hidden faces of AIDS, right? Mm-hmm. And it was women and girls, those that were most impacted. And so when we were trying to raise awareness and resources, and this is all pre-PEPFAR, President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, everything going across the United States to raise awareness of the issues and why, as the church, we needed to step into this role of responding to it, which we had been hesitant to. If we would show up in a city and we'd invite 100 pastors, and this is nothing against those pastors, but I'm just saying, if you would invite 100 of them, maybe 6 would show up. But if you invited a women's group or a women's ministry or a, you know, a women's network, 300 would show up, because the question was, would you respond to widows and orphans that were widowed or orphaned due to HIV and AIDS? 6 pastors would show up, 300 women would show up. So there was an actual intentionality of women to be empathetic, compassionate, responsive, and wanting to get to addressing the solution. And it's just how we're made. It's how we're created.
Yeah, I was going to say, why do you think that is? It's how we're made, how we're created. I read a thesis one time on how, because women in societies that they're uncentered, you know, so where they empathize with being exiled, or they empathize with being on the outside of power centers or help, because that's their experience, even if it's just a small experience. So they have a connection to those who are exiled and oppressed.
Marginalized.
Yeah.
Marginalized. Right. Right.
Because they feel and they know what that feels like. So there's a sense of like, oh, I know what that is. And so I'm leaning in.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that was kind of the door opening, was through the HIV and AIDS work. But then even today, you know, it's where, how do, through Strong Women, Strong World, where you're mobilizing women to respond to the issues and the needs of women and girls in the communities that we serve, they resonate with that in some way, in some experience in their life. They've hit that closed door, right? And they're willing and able to open that door and kick that door open for other women and girls, because they empathize, they've experienced it, and they know what it looks like. And so that's the exciting part for me, is I love the there, what happens with the there, which is the work that we're doing in the field through our access to water and education and economic empowerment, et cetera, et cetera. But the here is when the light goes off and that switch is flipped, where somebody says, oh, I know I can do something about this in this way. I can tell others about it, or I can involve my friends, or I can support the work financially, or support the work by bringing together those that can support the work. So that's really where our strategy or our methodology of raising awareness, using our influence, engaging our relationships that lead to resources. So I think that's a powerful thing. And I love watching that come to be. And I think you experienced some of that with us when we did the event in New York, and you saw some of that.
Oh, yeah. That also is, just as a communicator, one of my favorite moments is where you can see people go, oh, I get it.
Yeah, like, I get it.
That light turning on is like literally kind of what I live for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. And even in my life, like I love that in my life where I come into some mm-hmm. sort of like, oh, that's, you know, that's what's happening.
Yeah.
Tell me some of your most exciting. So like you had some pretty audacious goals and now you've set even more. Like, so talk to me about that, because you're kind of knocking it out of the park in terms of making meaningful differences in the world. So you had a goal of 30 million, you know, really affecting the lives of 30 million girls and women.
Yes.
Which you did.
We exceeded that goal by, I think it was 150,000. We exceeded that goal in the 7-year time span. And we're now launching a new effort globally to impact the lives of 300 million people, of which 150 million of those are intentionally women and girls. Mm-hmm. And so that's inspiring, visionary, and a little scary to think about that, because I want to be able to come back to you and say, hey, we exceeded our goal of 150 million. I'm, as you are and many others are, A-type personality, want to strive hard, hit hard, and go for achieving those goals. And so, but I'm confident in the work that we're going to do to be able to be very extremely intentional about, you know, access to water and economics, healthcare, education, ending child marriage, which is a huge goal of ours, mm-hmm. and in everywhere we work. And so how do we do that in a really thoughtful way and achieve those goals and beyond? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's just too many women and girls that do not have those opportunities that should. And that's the there. On the here is how many of those women here, women and young women and girls, able to respond to those needs and be in relationship of understanding that they can make a global impact.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I went to an event that you host in New York, a Strong Women, Strong World, for 2 years. This is my second year.
Yeah.
And the first year I remember being really like just kind of made aware for the first time at the amount of power and resources that women actually are holding now and will hold in the future, mm-hmm. and how that is deeply connected to those who don't have power or privilege or resource. And that was a real aha moment for me, you know, the first year when I heard, you know, that idea that like by 2030, 2/3 of the Western wealth of the world will be in the hands of women.
I need to tell you about Strong Women, Strong World and how you can partner and invest and come alongside and help. Strong Women, Strong World is a movement through World Vision that is doing incredible work. And we know that with intentional focus, this is Strong Women, Strong World and World Vision's understanding, extreme poverty doesn't stand a chance unless girls and women are empowered. That's not just them, that's everyone, but that's their focus. So their efforts focus on clean water and healthcare, protecting children from violence and harmful traditional practices, providing economic opportunities for women, and so much more. I mean, it goes on and on, guys, and it's absolutely beautiful. Since 2016, World Vision's reached more than 30 million women and girls, and their audacious new 8-year goal is to reach 150 million more, okay, by 2030. So this is, guys, empowering women and girls to live safer, healthier, more productive lives. This work really matters. So have a look. Go to Strong Women, Strong World, and we'll include a link in the show notes. Learn more and be part of the change that we need to see to make this world better.
Absolutely. And if we're not paying attention to that, you know, there's a lot of good things that can happen with that wealth. But, you know, I definitely have a heart, and I think you do too, and others, is calling them to a significant portion of that being to change the lives of those that do not have access mm-hmm. to that, to opportunities and changing their trajectory. Every woman of those 100 and girls of those 150 million that we are trying to reach, they have dreams, mm-hmm. they have hopes. Just because they don't have opportunity doesn't mean that they wouldn't want mm-hmm. a better life for themselves and for their children. And so we as women and men who care about these issues can make that difference. Mm-hmm. And so we need to be very, very thoughtful and intentional about that in how we access that.
Catherine, do you have specific memories or like encounters that you've had in those places, you know, that have really like, where you're like, oh yeah, this really matters?
Oh, you know, thank you. That's a great question. I travel a lot and I go to these communities a lot. And every time I go, I'm looking for my moment, and I'm leading other groups, other people in group. And I'm always trying to be extremely intentional of what is my moment. What is it that where I know that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, that I'm in that sweet spot of really making a difference and making an impact. If I don't have that, then I'm irrelevant to the work. If it's rote or just methodical, then I shouldn't be doing this anymore. But I will speak about a woman that I met in a community that we went to, and this was a few years ago. And we visited her family, and frankly, we had gone to an area that we had not been in, no other organizations were working there. And I hadn't seen this level of poverty in a development context in a very long time. And I was surprised. I was surprised that there, I mean, seriously, and I'm like, I have this internal wrestling always where I'm going, seriously, are we still at this place? Haven't we made more progress? I mean, and we met this family, and her name was Charity. And I looked at them and the children and her in this place that they were living at. And I thought, when we come back next year, they're not going to be here. They're, you know, I mean, it was desperate. And all of us were really humbled by that and wanting to do something and immediately. And we had an immediate response, but then the World Vision has a very thoughtful, methodical process of the long term, right? And that's hard. And I'm supposed to be a professional in this, and I'm not wanting to be professional. I'm wanting to say, do something about this right now, get them out of here, get them clothed, get them fed, get them everything that they need to do. And doing a little bit of that, but really trusting the process. So we go back a year later, and now this community has received access to clean water, which is really the tipping, you know, the tip of the spear of getting anything done. Nothing else can happen until you have access to water. And so we get to this community, and this woman comes up and to me, and she's, and to the whole group, hugging us all. And she goes, don't you remember me? And she has her hair done up, and she's got ribbons in her hair, and she's all dressed up. And she goes, I'm Charity. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I cannot believe it. I mean, she's vibrant, she's clean, she's happy. She takes us to her home. I mean, it's all cleaned up. She's got her dish rack. She's got a clothesline. I mean, and to me, that was where I go, oh yeah, you have those dark nights of our soul of wrestling with God and saying, why is it like this? But then you get to come back and see, oh yeah, this is working, and it's supposed to be working. And that sort of puts wind in my sails to keep on going.
Yeah.
So
that's cool. Yeah. I love that her name was Charity, you know, which is love. Yeah. That a little love grows, you know, I love that so much.
Yeah, she was amazing. And she's become a leader in her community. And here she thought she was no one, right? Mm-hmm. And she was just kind of sitting there. She had been abandoned by her husband. And she's sitting there just waiting for fate, right? Mm-hmm. And instead she was able to step into this role and really grow. And that's all we need is just a little flick, mm-hmm. like a flower of a dandelion, right? That little puff, and you just flick it and it takes off on its own, mm-hmm. and does amazing things. So yeah.
I think that's one of the most inspiring things about the long-term strategy of World Vision's development work is that agency, it has to be part of the process. Like you can feel good if you go in and feed people and clothe people, but actually it's not going to make a systemic difference. Yeah. And then the next year you go, they're just going to need more, and then they're going to need more, and then they're going to need more. But this idea that agency and empowerment is changing things, you know, and that charity then becomes the agency of empowerment for her community. I mean, that's the real long-term change that is so inspiring.
Right. Absolutely. And that's really, you know, when I talked about women, it's the here and the there, right? But both when that light switch goes on where that you say, I get it. It's similar for them there, for those women and the girls and the men and the families and communities there, is that they have opportunity. We're calling it agency, but they have opportunity to become definers of their future.
Yeah.
They just need that little push of access, right? Mm-hmm. And so I can define where I'm going in my future. I can, you know, there's going to be obstacles that come my way, but just because I don't have opportunity doesn't mean that I'm not smart, I'm not intuitive, I'm not entrepreneurial, I just need that little push and then the charities of our world can step into that and define what their future looks like for themselves and their children's and generations to come. So
it's amazing. Now, I have a personal question around, and this is something that I sometimes struggle with, is just this kind of cynical thought process, or like just cynical worldview that comes in when I live in a world of plenty and abundance and even probably like reckless affluence. And then I'm faced with the reality of the global poor and even just, you know, the marginalized, excluded, oppressed folks that are even here. But what are some techniques in that, this being your life, you know, you're with, you know, you're in circles of great affluence and power, and then you're also like, you've got your heart set on helping and serving the global poor. How do you do that with hopefulness and tenderness and kindness? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you not turn cynical in your own self?
That's a great question. I'd say that really it comes down to, for myself, is that God has called us to be in relationship with the poor. He talks about it all through the word, right? And in that relationship, and I believe my role and our roles at World Vision is connecting the poor with the non-poor. Mm-hmm. We have access, I have access to introductions into those with affluence and influence and those in extreme poverty situations. So now we're going to connect the poor with the non-poor. And we're never really sure who the poor are and who the non-poor are, right? We may be materially wealthy, but very spiritually poor. Or we may be materially poor, but very spiritually rich and fulfilled. And so there's a beautiful, sacred journey that the poor and the non-poor can walk together as they're going back and forth with one another. And there's a lot of lessons to be learned because, you know, if we're believers in God, he could solve the problems of the poor with the snap of his fingers. But I believe he wants us to be in relationship with one another, experience that sacred trust of walking back and forth and really growing richer on both sides by having this experience. And so I think that's how I reconcile it and how I work with it is understanding that there's both needs and resources on both sides of the equations.
Yeah, I love that idea of the connected, like your job is to connect and to help other people connect, not just with the light on, like connect with their own ability to do something different, but also connect with one another.
Right.
Yeah. And that is a fascinating thing, isn't it? When you realize, like, it's not until you go, I feel like it's not until you go to, like, you're in proximity with folks who have, your view of them has been through the lens of poverty. Right. But then you realize actually, oh, wow, it seems like I'm the one who
absolutely
is poor, you know, in so many ways. Fascinating.
Yeah. And we get much more from it, I think, than they do. Their physical circumstances change, but our spiritual and soul changes in our relationship with them. Mm-hmm. We become far richer, I think.
Yeah. And that's an area I think that we haven't really, like, we've diminished in this last generation, right? Where it's like nothing, that doesn't matter. Only the material world matters. Yeah. And then we have this like literal poverty of spirit everywhere where people are questioning the meaning of life and struggling with anxiety and depression. And then you're like, wait a minute, I have a thought and a solution for you.
Absolutely. Because, you know, I believe that we've all been created to do something for someone else in some way. And until we find that path on what that looks like, we're always trying to fill that void. Mm-hmm. And if we're trying to fill that void with stuff, it's not going to meet that need. Mm-hmm. And so it's when we're in relationship with somebody else that fills us up. It's the mutual transformation, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not weighted. When it becomes where it's all about me giving and here's how good I feel about giving, then that's not sustainable for the long term. But for the long term, it's when I am getting something back that is filling that hole and that void in my heart, and in my soul and in my spirit, that's when it becomes, you know, sustainable for a lifetime.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What if you were starting again, you know, you're 25 years old, what would you tell yourself now after a life of living this way? What would you say at 20 to your own 25-year-old self?
Well, I didn't start doing this work until I was 42 years old. I'd sort of always done it on a small scale basis, and growing up on a ranch in Mexico, we, you know, like did school and healthcare and things like that with neighboring ranches and things like that. But I would start more intentionally in this work earlier. That's one of the things that I say is my greatest regret at World Vision, is that I didn't start doing this sooner so I could do it longer. Mm-hmm. And, but then, you know, maybe I wouldn't have had the drive or the intentionality to push as hard as I think I have. You know, sometimes that force is not always well received, but we end up getting there where we need to be, you know? And so, truthfully, as I'm sitting here thinking about it, I don't think I'd change anything, because all of the experiences that I had up until the point of where I started doing this work, as a full-time career at World Vision, is built experiences and knowledge base and that I could apply to what I do now. Mm-hmm. So it all was helpful, and it's all built, and it's a life journey. And we need to look at every decade as what is this season going to be for me? Mm-hmm. And how am I going to be a positive contributor to that? And so I don't think I would change much of anything. A few mistakes I've made along the way, or maybe more than a few, I think I'm where I'm supposed to be, you know?
Yeah. When you're 40 and you're like, were you looking for a way of doing meaningful work, or did it surprise you that this opportunity?
It was happenstance. They needed somebody for a 90-day temporary job to translate letters. And since I was bilingual, I didn't even know who World Vision was. And I went in and I started, and here I am 30 years later. So, you know,
wow.
So it was happenstance. But I found, as I look back, all of the past experiences that I had and that I've had, and how I grew up and different, you know, career opportunities that I've had, everything just built a skill base and a knowledge base that have contributed to where I am today. So, yeah.
Right. So God knew. So by happenstance, we mean like a divine setup.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It was meant to be. And when I look back at it, it's like, oh, who could believe that I'd be here? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And the first day I went to interview at the office, I just said, Lord, could you love me so much that I could do this for the rest of my life? And and I felt like he picked me up, sat me on his lap, kissed me on the cheek and said, yes, you get to do this for the rest of your life.
Wow.
So here I am. Yeah.
I love that. And I love that you're still like, so that applying that principle, like when you're on a trip or you're even with a group of women or you're at your job and you're looking for opportunities, like you're looking for what is God teaching me? Like, where's the invitation for me here? So that it's not just rude. It's not some job I'm doing, but this is like kind of a discovery of God's great ways and will for the world. And I think that's some really beautiful advice to give to people, is not even so much, you know, like there's a way to plan this out, but there is this way to see differently and look for, you know, what the invitation is or what God's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. If we're not doing that, or if I'm not doing that, then I'm irrelevant. I shouldn't be doing it because anybody could do it. Right. And so then that, I'm missing my calling. I'm missing my purpose. I'm missing the intentionality of why I do this and why I love it. And it's, if we're not doing that, it's you can't sustain it for the long term because it'll overwhelm you and you'll get compassion fatigue. You'll get, you can get depressed. I struggled with that early on when I was traveling a lot and coming back and not being able to reconcile things, especially during the HIV and AIDS work. And, you know, my friends from my previous lives, you know, didn't want me around because that's all I would talk about. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, and I had no, I was not, had not refined how to engage them in the work that I was doing without overwhelming them and trying to just throw this whole burden of global poverty, global challenges on them, but instead usher them in a way that they could be a part of it. And so, yeah, we have to be purposeful of finding that. And when we don't, when we can't do that anymore, then we need to find something else to do. So
did you find, Catherine, did you find ways like outlets personally just for self-care and that way of balancing that? Like, did you just, instead of putting it on other people, did you journal it through? Like, did you find someone to talk to? Like, what were some of your best practices you discovered in trying to figure that out?
That's great. That's a great question. I mean, I do it a lot with my family. And I mean, we ski as a family. And so that's a great outlet for me to get outdoors, skiing and other things, but getting outdoors and being in nature, that sort of shows me that the world is bigger than just me and the problems that I think that I need to handle on my own, which I don't. And so that kind of does a bit of a level set. And then I find creative outlets. You know, this is I'm a remodel junkie. And so, you know, in fact, yesterday I was just trying to buy a fixer up house with my son so that we could remodel it. Right. And turn around and flip it or rent it or do whatever. But that, because you see in that, you see, you're able to, you paint a wall and you look at the wall. Oh, that wall is done.
Yeah.
And it looks really good.
Yeah.
Right. And so you can, that's something you can bring to finality.
Yeah.
This work that I'm doing in is not, you don't bring it to finality, right? It continues to go and evolve. And so I think some of that is helpful to be able to do that and distract myself and doing the manual labor of it. So
that's great. Those are good. Such great wisdom and experience. I'm very thankful that you discovered this invitation God gave you to do this with your life, and thankful for the impact that you're having. And then the way that hopefully even this interview will help lights go on for people, that the way we live our lives is connected to the deepest things going on in the world. And we're all invited into mutual transformation.
Yeah. Well, we're very excited to be partnering with you on this, and we thank you for it. And to me, it's like, I stand back and I think, are we really a part of this podcast now? And we're going to be, you know, right side up. Are we going to not be upside down? We're going to be right side up with Danielle. I mean, so thank you. I mean, it's taking us to the next level and to the next level. And sometimes I it's unbelievable to me that we're even here. And so I'm really thankful and appreciative of it.
All right.
And thank you for allowing us to give voice to these opportunities.
Oh, yeah, this is important. And this these voices matter. So I'm honored.
Hey, speaking of empowering women, the voices of women are often silenced or unwanted or unsupported or untrained. And we felt like it was time to stop that. So we started a thing called Women Speakers Collective. Women Speakers Collective is a global coaching community. So it's once a month, a coaching and a collective that you join. So you join with other women, but also you're coached in all things communication. And I would say even leadership, all things communication and leadership, because it's all around, you know, knowing who you are and learning about your own skills and then being able to partner and network and collaborate and then using your voice effectively for change and in the sphere that you're called to. People in business take this, people who are preaching, you know, who are on stages, who are doing public presentations, nonprofit leaders. We've had a mayor. We often offer these things called boot camps. Those are 2 days, like jam-packed communication training. So if that's your style, you could look for one of those coming soon. If you need an ongoing support, then the coaching community is for you. All the things. I mean, there's so many things I can't even begin to explain it, but it's an incredible global community of females raising their voice and trying to be the change they want to see in the world and liberating other women in the process. So you're going to want to check that out at womenspeakerscollective.com.